This is the Commonwealth Club of California. Find us on the internet at www.commonwealthclub.org. I'm Ann Clark, a member of the Commonwealth Club and chair of the Environment and Natural Resources member-led forum. Our program tonight is a holiday toast to the 2015 wine harvest and sustainable practices. And I'm proud and pleased to introduce you to Allison Jordan, California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance. Allison has been a friend to us and really helpful in our work as we talk about what is happening in California with the wine industry and the drought. So she's here today to be with us and to introduce our panel. Allison?
Thank you so much, Anne. It's great to be with you all tonight. We're so happy to be here. For us, harvest also means that we're getting closer to the holidays, so it's a great time to have a toast to the California wine industry. And we're also so happy to be able to share some stories about how California vintners and growers all over the state are using environmentally friendly and socially responsible practices in their vineyards and wineries really all year long. I've had the great fortune of working with the California wine community over the past dozen years or so, and to really get to know some of the people behind these practices. It's an incredible group of people, and it's really a group of growers and vintners that are dedicated to land, to the land and to natural resources, and they really want to help grow and make high-quality grapes and wine while being both environmental stewards and community stewards. So many of these growers and their families live on or near their vineyards and wineries. So you can imagine it makes good sense for them to be active with environmental stewardship and also to be active in their communities. And it just makes sense for the long term and for future generations. So sustainability really is not new, but I think the state's growers and vintners have really been using sustainable practices for decades now. But I think what is somewhat new is this commitment to sustainability in terms of continuous improvement, really looking at what you're doing and always striving to do better, and then also transparency. So the dedication is evident by the California Sustainable Wine Growing Program, a program that I manage, certified California Sustainable Wine Growing, as well as a number of other voluntary educational and certification programs that are available around the state. And we now have a couple of thousands of vineyards and wineries that are involved in these programs. They represent nearly three quarters of our wine grape acreage and wine case production. And you can imagine that as the fourth largest wine producing region in the world, that is quite impressive. So we're incredibly lucky to have a fantastic panel here today to talk with about their specific sustainable practices, and I just want to take a moment to introduce them. But it's also worth noting that the wineries that they represent are all 2015 California Green Medal Sustainable Wine Growing Leadership Award winners. So that's really fantastic. So to my right, we have Kent Mann, who is Vice President of Operations for Trinquero Family Estates in Napa Valley and in Lodi. And he is responsible for all of Trinquero's bottling production and distribution operations. No small feat. And Trinquero Family Estates has many, many efficient and innovative sustainability practices we could talk about. And one of them is the expansion of the company's Lodi facility with a state-of-the-art bottling and warehousing facility, which means that they're basically closer to a majority of the grape supply that they use, which really helps reduce the truck miles as well as their greenhouse gas footprint. Right next to Kent, we have Josh Priggy, the Director of Regenerative Development at Fetzer Vineyards in Mendocino County. I think that has to be the most interesting title I've heard, and I look forward to hearing more about what they mean by regenerative. And he's always looking for ways to further Fetzer Vineyards' position as a wine industry leader in both social and environmental responsibility, and has some great examples to share. Fetzer Vineyards has been pioneering earth-friendly practices since 1968, so again, it goes back decades. This is not new. And it was the first winery in California to operate on 100% renewable energy. It's the largest U.S. producer of certified California organic farm, certified organic wine grapes, and the first zero-waste certified wine company in the world. So some interesting facts. Next to Josh, we have Jeffrey Landolt. He is the state properties vineyard manager for Benzinger Family Winery in Sonoma County. Some of you may have had a chance to visit. He's responsible for all aspects of their Demeter certified biodynamic vineyards. Benziger is active in so many areas as well, and all of these wineries are. But some of the examples include water conservation, biodiversity, soil biology, composting, and also in education. So they educate their growers on all of these issues with annual seminars. They also have a really fun tram tour that shows the sustainability of their vineyards and stops by an insectary and is a great way to learn about sustainable wine growing. And then the last on my right is Cyril Penn, who joined Wine Communications Group in September of 1998 as the editor of Wine Business Insider. And in January 2000, he was named the editor-in-chief of Wine Business Monthly, one of our very important trade publications where we learn about what's going on in the industry and share best practices. He was actually a judge for the 2015 Green Medal Awards and has also really widely covered California sustainable wine growing around the state, and previously also covered energy-related issues in other industries as well as in his journalism career. So great perspective to bring in some other examples from outside the three wineries that are represented here. And so with that, I would like to kick it off. We're here celebrating the 2015 harvest. So I would like to hear from everyone about the 2015 harvest. What did you find in terms of the quality of the wines? What can we expect from your winery or your wine regions this year? And we'll just pass it down and you can start, Kent.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here and I'm very proud to represent Trincarero Family Estates. Thank you for the invitation. I heard last week we did a post-harvest review of how things went. A lot of it is focused on operations and the winemaking side. We did a post-harvest review and I kept hearing best harvest ever, which I thought was pretty cool. You almost always hear best harvest ever, but that means things are getting better. It's a sign of continuous improvement. And things went very well. An interesting harvest because, of course, we'll talk a little bit about the weather and some of the other things that affect the harvest. But what was really interesting was by about the first week of September, by the end of the first week of September, we were 50% done with the harvest. And our operations span Sonoma Valley, Napa Valley, as well as the big San Joaquin Central Valley, and then up into Amador County in the foothills. But company-wide, by the end of the first week of September, we were 50% done. And then the next week, we started harvesting Cab and Merlot, which is pretty early for us. Just to wrap it up, I'd say that our florals look really, really good. And Syrahs and Zinfandels as well are looking really, really good this year.
Great. And what about you, Josh?
Yeah, I think it was, we saw something similar. We saw, you know, excellent quality. It was one of the earliest beginnings and earliest ends that we've seen. It was a long bloom as well. It was like a four-week-long bloom. Cabernet was smaller berries, so I think increased flavors and increased quality in that. So overall, I think it was an excellent harvest, and there's going to be some amazing wines coming out of 2015 for sure.
Great. And Jeffrey, what have you seen?
So back up a little bit before we even got going, we came out of the warmest winter in recorded history for us, and that triggered. We have a really good diversification on our estate property, so we have vineyards right on the county line in the north. We have some vineyards less than 4 miles from the ocean out in the town of Bodega, and then of course our home ranch in Sonoma Mountain, and then a couple other ranches in Sonoma Valley, and all of them started their growing process about 3 to 4 weeks earlier than normal. So you'll probably hear a lot, not just from us, but from a lot of folks in the industry, that it was an early harvest, not for vineyard people. we've been going since January 5th, and it was a stretch to get all the pruning in. Like you just mentioned, the bloom period was really elongated. That's generally negative for forming the cluster that ends up becoming what you harvest. All in all, I think the wines are going to be really strong because the tonnage was off by about 30%. In addition to that, we had about 5 heat spells in the Sonoma Valley this year. Usually we're good for about 2. So we had 5 this year. So the folks that had to pick before the last 2 heat spells are going to make different wine than the folks that made it into October. And I think it's going to be the tale of almost 2 harvests, but I think the wines are going to be good. I think the wines that hung on till the very end in October, those are going to be the standouts, but all in all, like these gentlemen just said, I think it's going to be a really, really neat year for wine.
Great. And Cyril, did you want to add anything, sort of your observation statewide?
Oh, I would just say we'll see, you know, what the tonnage is and how much there is when we get the crush report in February. But mm-hmm. most people are saying we're a little bit down in the amount that was harvested. But this is coming. This was expected, of course, because right. we had three very large harvests in a row, which is kind of unheard of. There's new acreage coming online as well, so you know, we may be a little bit down, a little bit tight on grapes, but people are real happy about the quality. And yes, everything came in all at once, and when it does, that means there's less tank space, which makes it really hectic. But yeah, it's an early year. I don't think anyone's ever been done this quite this early overall. Right. So which is nice.
Great point. That's when people like Kent come into play, managing it all. So, we've often been asked about the whole issue of the drought. How has it affected the industry? And I will say that from my observation, the industry has focused on water use efficiency well before the drought ever happened. Of course, we're in California. Water is always an issue in California. We can expect cyclical drought. So the idea is to always be looking at how you can improve your water use efficiency. And in the state of California, we do our self-assessment using the Code of Sustainable Wine Growing. And so we're able to get a good sense of what practices are being adopted. And we found that in our most recent survey that basically 85% of the respondents that represent about 90% of the state's acreage are using some form of drip or micro irrigation, so it can be very targeted. So it's an interesting fact. But I'm just curious if you all could relay, and maybe Josh, we'll start with you this time. How has the drought impacted this year's vintage, and what type of water use or water conservation or have you been employing over the past several years or even more recently in response to the drought?
Sure. Yeah, well, we have, you know, we've done water conservation projects for years and drip irrigation in all of our vineyards, as well as develop storage ponds to collect rainwater. And up where we're at in Mendocino County, we're getting around 35 inches of rain a year. We got about 35 inches this last year. And so we're not in as dire of a situation as some places in California. We're doing well. We have about 960 acres, and about half of those we're able to irrigate and frost protect completely off of rainwater from the storage ponds that we've developed. In addition to that, you know, all 960 acres that we have are organic, and we've been doing organic since the 80s. So, you know, we're really, you know, using cover crops and compost, planting for biodiversity. All these things really increase the health of our soil year after year and the health of our vines, and really help us out and prepare us for droughts. So we feel like we're in a good spot to be drought resilient with the health that we've created in and around our vineyards. So that with, you know, the 35 inches, we're doing pretty good in Mendocino.
That's a really interesting perspective to think about your response in such a comprehensive way. So thank you for that. And Jeffrey, did you want to add anything about what you're seeing?
Yeah, we run into a similar situation. I don't know if you guys remember, but last December we got almost 21 inches of rain in 20 days. So we're also getting that 35 inches. But what we're seeing with climate change is all the rain at once. So for us, it's more about how you sequester that rain given a short amount of time period. So we've been cover cropping and composting for over 20 years. That's kind of the basic principles of biodynamics. Back up a little bit further, we recycle almost 1 million gallons a year in an average year. So all of our gray water coming out of the winery gets reused on the vines. So that's definitely a positive thing. And then what we also have seen is that the longer we can delay the initial irrigation, the less water we use. We call it the treadmill effect. Once you start watering, you can't get off the treadmill until you pick the fruit. So using some really simple technologies, it's fairly high tech, but it's simple at the same time, we're able to measure the water status of the plant above ground and then compile that data with what the below ground measurements are. So instead of May 15th, historically, we always watered. We don't do that anymore. We're saving almost 2 months of water by not starting in May, which is the historical time period in which we water. So the other thing that we employ is a technology called electrical conductivity mapping, and that helps us separate each of our vineyard blocks into two, sometimes even three. We have one that's five. It drives me crazy, but we have five different watering stations in one single block, and what that enables us to do is only water the plants that absolutely need it. So the last thing that I think is really important for us is our average estate vineyard employee has 15 years of experience on our ranch. So we know what areas are going to be showing water stress first, and I think that's what we call our human technology, and that's really important for us.
Great. Anything else, Cyril or Kent, you'd want to add to that? Okay, great. So the other thing to think about with sustainable wine growing is that water is part of it. Of course, it's a really important part of it, but it's about such a broader set of principles and practices, and it includes things like energy efficiency and protecting water and air quality and thinking about your purchasing patterns. So what's your environmentally preferable purchasing strategy, and how do you treat your neighbors and employees? It's this broader set of comprehensive sustainability practices that really matter. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about how you define sustainable wine growing. I mentioned this to them earlier that I'm gonna ask them to do it in Twitter form, so really short. How do you define this really complex set of ideas and what basically hundreds of decisions that need to be made daily in your vineyard and winery? How do you sum it up? So we'll just go down the line. You can start, Ken.
Twitter form, and I really didn't know what that was earlier, and I asked. But to sum it all up, and it's a certain number of characters, right? I'd call sustainability protecting our resources and partnering with our communities in order to ensure the success of our companies and our industry.
Nice one. Okay. And Josh?
And we, for many years, you know, we would say that we want to work in harmony with nature rather than against it, and with the utmost respect for the human spirit. And now we've, in the past couple of years, we want to move beyond sustainability so that we're not just sustaining, but we're actually regenerating and restoring. So our new vision is to operate in a way that restores, revitalizes, regenerates ecosystems and communities, while producing premium quality wines and advancing the health and well-being of our employees.
That's beautiful. Poetry. Jeffrey?
I also didn't know what the Twitter form was. I have no excuse for that. I grew up in that generation. So what we always talk about is not acting like the United States government, meaning borrowing from the future. We want to establish a bank account of air, soil, and water for future generations, and it's really that simple for us.
I don't know. These guys might have to go into advertising. That's beautiful. All right, and Cyril, do you have anything to add to that? I'm curious what your definition might be.
My definition of sustainability? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's economic sustainability, and there's environmental sustainability. And I think we're mostly talking about environmental sustainability here, and just, you know, wineries in general are, you know, oriented toward that, and it's just great to see, you know, the level of sophistication and the dedication, you know, being spent on that. So,
excellent. There's another idea that it's come out in a couple of the definitions that actually came from the UN Brundtland report in 1989 called Our Common Future, and it's about meeting the needs of the present without compromising the needs of future generations. And another one of our colleagues had talked about generational farming, which I think is also a really nice way of summing it up in two words. It's just impressive. So, great. And the other thing that is a really core principle of sustainable wine growing, we talk about it all the time. Everything that the California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance does is build around this idea of continuous improvement, really providing tools and resources to help vintners and growers identify where they have the biggest impact, how they're doing, and what they can do to make improvements, and that it's a never-ending cycle. We all continue to do it. And it reminds me, my daughter, who is 8 years old, just wrote the funniest letter to Santa Claus. And after her long list of all the things that she wanted, including two dogs, one for her and one for her brother, which is really scary as the mom, she said that she understands if he's not completely happy with her behavior this year and that she will try to do better. So that kind of sums up continuous improvement. I think we all are in that boat. But I would love to maybe start this time with Jeffrey and hear a little bit about some of the things that you do for continuous improvement.
Jeffrey, before we get to you, just to remind our audience, this is Ann Clark. You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Our program tonight is a holiday toast to the 2015 wine harvest and sustainable practices. And I love the letters that we could send to Santa Claus. Maybe we could send them back to Washington, D.C. once in a while. I shouldn't have said that, huh? So, Jeffrey?
Thanks. We have a large family of independent growers, about 42 of them, and they grow all the grapes for our Sonoma County line. And that's really an example of what we do. What we do externally with those folks is at the end of the year, after we make their wine, we invite them in, we go through their entire farm plan, how they got to where they got to when they turned in the grapes, and then we try the wine, and we offer them some critiques on how they can improve. And most of the time they're getting so much better, we have to offer cash incentives because they're over delivering for us. And that the system that we have set up is called a grower feedback loop. And when you give people feedback and there's an incentive, you'll be amazed at the quality you get. So that's what we're doing on a an external level. Internally, we're constantly on the grind. We're preparing right now for our annual vineyard meeting where we bring in all the winemakers. We bring in all of our consultants. It's about a three-day meeting, and we try every single wine in the lineup. So it's about 90 of them, and it takes a long time, and we spit all the samples. Trust me, you have to at that point. And it's a really exciting time because you can go through all these wines, and you can sometimes you get a disconnect, and then you can go back to the data that we keep during the year, and we can say, oh, you know, we started watering that block maybe a little too early. Maybe that's why the flavors are a little diluted, or vice versa. We get confirmation for the correct decisions that we made out there. So we do kind of both an internal and an external, but it's continuous, that's for sure.
Right. And Kent, I'd love to hear a little bit about what you do on the operation side, even within the winery.
Sure, Allison. You mentioned earlier about our facility in Lodi and just the selection of Lodi for our state-of-the-art bottling facility. The selection itself was very much a positive impact on the environment with the reduction of transportation of wine back to Napa Valley to be bottled. Now it's all made there and bottled there, which is a fantastic move. A lot of grapes that we harvest and produce into wine are grown in the Lodi region, very up-and-coming region. And just looking at that facility from a design perspective, it's from the ground up, it was really built to showcase environmentally sound practices. And you can walk into this 660,000 square foot facility, and immediately you can tell how bright it is. And when you look up, you see LED lights, which we really partnered with PG&E to make into a nice process. And then we've got a lot of use of skylights. End to end, there's a lot of automation, and all the motors are designed to be efficient. And when you go into the warehouse, it's a fully automated warehouse, so that reduces the amount of forklift traffic needed to transport product around the warehouse. We also designed it with a very, very nice solid waste recycling facility. We recycle 98% of our solid waste, and it's all collected in one area. We bale it. We actually partner with a recycling company to make sure that it's brought back into the process like it should be. We also have solar arrays there too, and we support our power structure with about 40% of the power that we use from solar during the off season. And end-to-end, it's just a fantastic facility.
I've seen it. Is it very impressive, for sure? And Josh, I know you guys work a lot with a green team and really bringing together all the various individual departments or aspects of the growing grapes and making wine. Mm-hmm. And I'd love for you to talk a little bit about how that leads to continuous improvement for you.
Yeah, we have what's called the E3 team. And now with this new direction towards regeneration, we're renaming it the RE3 team. But this is a group of employees from all departments who meet once a month to advance sustainable and regenerative projects in the vineyards, in the winery, and office buildings. And we also use a number of organizations for reporting and to set goals with, like the, of course, we've been certified with the Certified California Sustainable Wine Growing Program. We use the U.S. Zero Waste Business Council for our zero waste certification to manage and track and set goals for all of our waste and recycling. So last year we diverted 98.5% of all of our waste from the landfill, and we have a target of 99.9% by 2020. We report our greenhouse gas emissions with the Climate Registry and have been able to reduce those by over 50% since 2005. And our new goal there is to be carbon neutral by 2016. So we're going to actually start purchasing carbon offsets this year to offset our remaining emissions. And our really our North Star of where we want to be that we just developed is to become net positive by 2030. So by 2030, we want to completely eliminate or offset in some way all of our negative impacts and only be producing positive impacts so that we have a positive corporate footprint. So that is really what's going to guide us, you know, over the next 15 years to really push us to improve in all areas of our sustainability program.
That's fantastic. And you can see that these are three stellar examples of wineries that are really showing leadership. But the interesting thing is this language is not unique to these three. We hear these kinds of conversations across the board. And it's really fun to see. It's almost sort of like a healthy competition to see who can be the best or the biggest or the most innovative. So it's a really fun space to watch. And I also hear people talk a lot about it's like solving puzzles. Like, we can't wait to figure out how do we solve this particular problem in a really useful way. So it's really great to hear you talk about that. And Cyril, I noticed you sort of came on board as the Wine Business Monthly editor just as these types of programs and initiatives were really launching. And I want to know, what have you seen in terms of progress over the past decade or so?
Well, it's funny. On the one hand, you know, wine is from the earth and the vineyard. And you know, people sometimes assume that all wineries are green, and they are, really. I mean, they just have this orientation. But a lot of wineries have the resources to really, really look at it and go through every aspect of what they do. And it's like that iterative thing where you just keep working on it and keep working on it. So in the last 15 years, you know, so much has happened. I mean, it used to be get a news release about a winery getting a solar array, and oh, we're going to, you know, it's, I'm sure that the wine industry has the highest penetration rate of solar of any industry in California. I'd be surprised. I'm pretty sure that's true. Now you see Kendall Jackson working with Tesla on, you know, battery storage, which is really the holy grail of solar. I mean, it's really cool, cutting edge stuff. We see companies to save water using lasers to clean their tanks, and on and on and on. So there's new stuff all the time.
That's great examples. And Jeffrey, you brought this into your response for the last question, but we often try to think about, obviously the end goal is to make the best wine out of the best wine grapes possible. Mm-hmm. So do you think there really are these linkages between sustainable practices, and can it have an impact on quality? Beyond what you already said, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't be doing biodynamics and organics at the level that we're doing it if it didn't make better wine. I mean, you have part of sustainability is being economically viable. It has to make a better product, and I've tried some organic and nothing here, of course, but I've tried some organic products that aren't that great. And just because you're organic or biodynamic doesn't mean that the wine is great. But what we've been trying to do for 20 years, and this was really the vision of our founding partner, Mike Benziger, was to establish deep root growth so that we were expressing, you know, a lot of people throw around this word terroir. What we're really trying to express is the mineral expression after you get past the topsoil and that conversion area of your base, you know, rock at every site. So that convergence area is where what we call the regolith, actually, and that that's the area where we want our roots to get into. It makes for way more resilient plants. And Josh mentioned that you know, that we're getting more resilient plants, we're more resistant to disease, and we're getting more mineral expression. Site expression is everything to us, because a lot of the larger companies are moving more toward a commodity-driven type of wine. And the way that we feel you get away from that is not farming in the top 18 inches, because the top 18 inches of the soil is pretty much the same everywhere around the world, you could argue. What lies at 6 to 7 feet in that really important regolith zone is where we feel that the true expression of a vineyard comes out. So yes, I do think that there's a tight end quality. And another thing we preach too with all of our vineyard folks is, what if it didn't make any difference, you know, these practices that we're doing? We feel that they are, and we have scientific data to back that up. But let's just say for a second that they weren't. You have to be out in the vineyard all the time as an organic farmer. You don't have a silver bullet to spray on stuff if you get an infestation in a corner of your vineyard. So it's making us better farmers, and better farmers apply things in a more timely way. And viticulture, by and large, the best wines in the world, I can guarantee you that every single process that's done in the vineyard is done exactly when it should be. So it's really more of the human connection in there, not having that silver bullet that creates our wines of expression.
Josh, would you like to add anything to how you think it impacts quality?
Yeah, I think I completely agree with Jeffrey, and that was the philosophy of our founder, Barney Fetzer, when he founded the company in 1968. His philosophy was that earth-friendly practices produce better grapes, and of course, better grapes produce better wine, and you know, that's why we started organic grape growing and biodynamic, because you know, building that health of the soil and the health of the vines, we feel absolutely contributes to a better quality fruit. And I would also, you know, move that discussion into the winery and into finance and into production, all aspects of the company, because I feel like people want to work for a company that is about more than just maximizing profits. And it, you know, employees are more engaged when they feel like they're a part of something bigger. And we see that with a lot of our employees. They're very engaged. You know, engaged employees are more productive because they're a part of something bigger than just making money. They're about protecting the planet. They're about a company that's doing the right thing. And we just became a certified B Corp. I don't know if anyone has heard of B Corps before, but we're one of a handful of wine companies in the world. And, you know, that also contributes to attracting new talent and getting employees, you know, younger people, they want to work for companies that are responsible. So we think that carries over to all aspects of the company, whether it's winemaking, in the vineyards, in the production building, folks in finance. It really increases engagement, and we feel definitely contributes to an overall better quality in all areas.
Those are all really great points. And it's interesting you brought in the social element of sustainability, which is always so critical. And then also the whole idea that the amount of time you spend here, this for sustainable practices in general, I think you're focused always on continuous improvement, but you also are very engaged in every aspect of growing grapes and making wine. And that time and attention to detail can't help but make better grapes and wine. So we think that there is a connection, whether it or not it is can be specifically scientifically pinpointed. But there are things like water use management and others that can have a really big impact on wine quality, being very targeted in how you apply it. So there are many, many ways we could look at this. And Cyril, did you want to add anything before we move on?
No, I would just say with the water thing, fortunately, you know, a little less water sometimes gives you better quality. And you know, there's actually a lot of different cool tech stuff going on with the grapes and measuring how the water, you know, gets into the vines, gets into the soil, weather stations, all of this stuff that's kind of changing, and people are kind of teasing out, you know, when do I water and how much I water and how that affects the quality. And a little bit less can be good if it's at the right time. So.
Right. I think they're calling it precision agriculture, yeah. And we're seeing that really across the board. And another important element of sustainability is biodiversity and conservation, which all, of course, is also very important for the community. And Ken, I'd like you to talk a little bit about some of the efforts that Trinchero has engaged in on conservation.
Sure. By the way, you guys are amazing. Amazing individuals and representatives from their companies. And what I hear a lot of is what you would hear in any significant player in the wine industry. You could plug and play these guys anywhere, and they would be excellent examples of what's happening in the industry. We have a brand called Trinity Oaks, and Trinity Oaks partners with Trees for the Future. It's a nonprofit organization, and this is a good example of an initiative that really kind of works back into the environment. Since 2008, Trinity Oaks has planted one. Trinchero Family Estates has sponsored the planting of one tree for every single bottle of Trinity Oaks sold, and we're approaching 14 million trees planted as a result of the sales of Trinity Oaks. And those trees are going into regions that are deforested, places in South America, places in Africa. And not only is it great for the environment, but it's great for those communities as well. We are partnering with around 500 different communities around the world, and 800 to 900,000 people are affected by this initiative. So it's not only great in projecting the impact of this brand and our partnership with Trees for the Future, but if you look at the package itself, it's designed as a sustainable package as well. The labels and the marketing materials are made from 100% recyclable materials. The glass itself, of course, is an excellent recyclable material, and even the cases, we are using unbleached cases to make sure that these are better materials that can go back into the recycling program.
Great. I was just looking through some of your outstanding questions, which we're going to get to shortly. I'm going to just ask one more, and then we'll turn to some of those that are from the audience, and I'm going to combine a couple of ideas, but one is, I'm assuming there are some wine consumers out there. Raise your hands. I know I am one. So is sustainability important to your customers? And then also, many of you have mentioned the numerous sustainability certifications you have, and there are so many. And we're seeing that more and more wineries are adopting certification. So why is that important? Because I think those two things kind of go together. And Jeffrey, why don't we start with you?
Sure. I'd like to attempt to answer that question from more so from the farming end of things, because I think these gentlemen are probably more qualified to talk about the marketing sense. But for us, let's be honest, agriculture, farming is really, really hard. Nobody just wakes up and does it. There's a lot of machines that can aid in what you're doing. It's definitely an industry on the cutting edge of mechanization. Because it's so hard, it's very easy to take some shortcuts. So for us, the actual certification, we have the sustainable, and then we have the organic, and then we have the biodynamic on top of that. And they're all extremely well audited. Trust me, they do not let you slip on anything. Because we know that, it just kind of is always in the back of your mind. Not that we would, I mean, we have a lot of honor out there, and we conduct ourselves with a lot of integrity on a daily basis, and we treat these vineyards like a member of the family, and like we are owners, although we're not. But for us, the actual certification part is important, because we want people to know that we're actually doing what we're saying out there in the marketplace. However, there's a lot of really, really top-notch wineries that I'm not going to say, because they clearly don't want to be known by this, but there is some unbelievable wineries out there that are practicing really high levels of organics and biodynamics that don't put it on the bottle. You know, there's the Romani Conti, for example, in France. The most expensive bottle of wine in the world doesn't have biodynamic on it, but it is. It's farmed biodynamically. And so whether or not people are certified to us is for them to decide. For us, it's extremely important, because we don't want any questions. We want people to know that that we're doing exactly what we're saying we're doing, because it's hard work.
Great. Okay. So in order to make sure we have enough time, I will turn it over to Anne.
This is Anne Clark. You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Our program tonight is a holiday toast to the 2015 wine harvest and sustainable practices. And as Allison has told us and reminded us, it is now time for our audience question cards. Allison, back to you.
Great. Okay, so we have so many wonderful questions, and I'm going to try to lump some of them together because I think that way we'll be able to get to more of them. And some of these ideas are, I think, pretty consistent. So one of them is that we heard Jeffrey about his interaction with their wine grower partners. Could we hear from the others about their participation with small wine growers and how are they all practicing sustainability? And then the other one is, are the giant wine producers, and they gave some examples, doing anything regarding sustainability? And the third question that I think is somewhat related is it possible for wineries to cooperate to achieve economies of scale in common operations? I think of composting, recycling as examples. So great questions. I will just start by, I've observed that this industry has incredible collaboration between the growers and the vintners and between wineries of all sizes. It's amazing to me how generous some of the large wineries have been with their time and expertise and resources, and then helping us put that together in a code of best practices that can be used by a vineyard or winery of any size. And we're also always striving to find ways to make things like certification more affordable and doable for small growers and wineries too. So I think those scales are something that with, again, the fourth largest wine growing region with thousands of growers and vintners all over the state, very diverse in terms of small mom and pop shops all the way to very large vineyard acreage and very large production. And so it's amazing that we found some really useful ways to collaborate. But I would love to hear your response to that. Are there ways that we can collaborate potentially regionally? How do we work with small growers? And what are you observing about size and how that matters? Want to go first, Josh?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, what the California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance has been extremely valuable in bringing together vineyards, farmers, and educating them on sustainable practices, why it's important, what are the benefits. And, you know, that's something that we try to do internally with our growers as well. We have a number of growers that are now moving to organic because we're able to communicate, you know, what it's doing for our soil and in our vines, in our surrounding environment, and it's making us more climate resilient, drought resilient. So I think the big thing is education, because, you know, all these small farmers, any farmer, these are people that are tied to their land and love their land and they want to protect it. Sometimes it just comes down to educating. So we've also made a goal that by 2020 we'll have 100% of our suppliers sustainable certified in some way, whether it's the California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance certification or SIP certification, Lodi Rules. We want to work with all of them to have them all certified by 2020.
Great. Cyril?
Yeah, I would just address the question about the big wineries. Mm-hmm. It's the big wineries, or you could say, are doing it more, or what they have the resources to really, really look at the problem of, you know, how are we sustainable, and really embrace that and go after it. So it's the large wineries that are doing some of the most innovative stuff because they can, and I'd say it's across the board. I can't think of anybody who isn't engaged. So
that's a great point.
I think that question also addressed what to do with skins and stems and seeds. Mm-hmm. And definitely, I know for a fact, stems are composted, skins are sold as cattle feed to dairies, or dried and used for a different feed material, or even sent to the oil fields of Texas to help put a seal on an oil well and be able to draw more oil from the ground. So the materials that come out of the wine crushing process are all recycled in some way.
I was just thinking another response about the big wineries is that we do have now wineries that produce 70% of all of California wine certified. And if you look at the California wine grape acreage, which is now 615,000 acres, we have about a quarter of the acreage is certified to one of our certification programs, whether it's Certified California Sustainable Wine Growing, Lodi Rural SIP Certified, or Napa Green. So it's great to see that kind of adoption. But at the same time, you don't have to be certified to be employing sustainable practices. And as Cyril said, I think that if you look around, at least most growers and vintners are using at least some sustainable practices. And again, because we emphasize continuous improvement, it's fine for them to start where they are and to learn about better practices and to continue to improve. And we've had something like 400 workshops all over the state for, I think, 11,000 attendees over the past decade or so. So there's a lot of interest and engagement by wineries and vineyards of all sizes.
And there's similar programs on a smaller scale involving smaller wineries in Washington and Oregon and New York, et cetera, et cetera.
You just led into a next question, which is great. So someone asked, what is the history and extent of sustainable wine growing? Did it begin in Europe, California? How many of the classic vineyards in Europe are using these practices? Anyone want to touch on the international realm or sort of... I can share the history, but
I'll let you share the history. For us on the biodynamic side, that was started in Germany, basically. And what we're seeing in the biodynamic world, from a 35,000 foot view, I guess you could say, is that on the practitioner level, Europe is kind of dropping off, actually. Compared to what we're doing here, there's definitely way that the movement has swung from Europe to the United States, and on the practitioner level, it's really catching steam. And one thing that we're doing to increase the knowledge is, we have a lot of community involvement already in our winery, and what we decided to do is produce these medicinal teas that are the biodynamic preparations, and we still do them all by hand, but we've been making a lot more of those so that we can sell those at a nominal cost to some local farmers that are interested from the practitioner side, because we spend a lot of time and a lot of money making these preps, and we understand that it's not realistic for your average plus farmer to be able to invest this type of time and money. So it's not a money-making scheme at all. We'll get back a tiny bit of our cost on that. But what's really about is continuing this kind of swing on the practitioner level that's going on in the United States right now. But definitely we're seeing a drop-off in Europe on the biodynamics.
So from a sustainability perspective, I think, again, this really goes back decades. It goes back probably longer than that in European countries, where people have been paying attention to soil management and pest management and some really key issues for sustainability. But the programs that we see that are also available internationally, New Zealand, South Africa, Australia, Chile, all have sustainability efforts, and we're doing more collaboration. I just got back from a conference in Italy where many of those countries were represented. And so there is collaboration, but there's also that sort of, we want to be the leaders in sustainable wine growing. So I would say in California, it started with some of the biodynamic and organic movements back in the 70s or earlier, and then also with integrated pest management being a focus at UC Davis and a lot of work going on to educate growers around the state on those issues. But it was really in the mid-90s to the early 2000s that some of these sustainability programs came to be. And to show that we, I think, are deserving leaders in the space, we got a Drink Business Magazine Green Award 2 years in a row, the first time that they offered it, and they were looking at all of the different international programs, and ours came out strong, so we were very proud of that. I'm going to end with one last question, and again, tie these together. You brought up climate change. So one of them was, what does climate change mean for you? Will you change the varieties you're growing? But probably a bigger picture question to end on is, what's the next sustainability challenge you would like solved? If you could ask Santa Claus, what new technology, state policy, or operational practice would you like to get? You can start.
We talked a little bit about greenhouse gases earlier, and I'd say that one of our biggest challenges is really meeting regulatory requirements for greenhouse gas emissions and understanding what the best available technology is, best available viable technology is to capture greenhouse gases in the fermentation process. And the, of course, you know that the Environmental Working Group from the Wine Institute is working very hard on that, partnering very closely with both the EPA and the San Joaquin Valley Unified Air Pollution Control District to come up with the right solution. And it's going to take some time and effort, and we've already got a lot of good traction around this. But when we were faced with this question years ago, we couldn't really foresee what the solution was going to be. We felt that it was going to be something that would really cost the companies a significant amount of money. But over time and a lot of thought and innovation, we were coming close to a solution that's going to be a win for the industry.
Josh, would you like to comment?
Yeah, when I think about the largest sustainability challenge, I guess I automatically go to water. Obviously, that's what's on everyone's minds. And it's, you know, with climate change over the next 10, 20, 30 years, we have to really develop new ways of doing things. And, you know, water conservation projects are great, and it's the great way to start, you know, with drip irrigation and efficient, water efficient everything in the winery. But then we need to take it another step further. And how do we reuse our water? How do we irrigate with water rainfall? How do we restore our watersheds and regenerate watersheds so that they're holding more water? I think we're going to have to get really innovative over the next 10 or 20 years. And I like a lot of these great things that I'm seeing in all these wine companies. So I'm very optimistic, and we're really looking forward to diving into that, reusing water and regenerating watersheds in the next year or two.
Great, Jeffrey.
Sure. On the vineyard side of things, we're not changing out any varieties as it stands right now. I think we were a little forward-thinking at the time 30 years ago when we planted, at least our home ranch, we planted like 85% Cabernet, something like that. And it's not a site that you get Cabernet ripe every single year right now. So we probably stand a decent chance to continue with our existing varieties. And then at the coast, if we can't grow Pinot Noir there, we're not going to grow anything. I mean, that's just that's the bottom line. Biggest challenge for me, in addition to the water, certainly these guys bring up great points on the water. For me, the biggest challenge that I see from a sustainability standpoint is labor. We have to get an immigration program that works. We got to look in the past. We got to look at the Bracero program that worked well. We have to make something work. The current state of the folks that do the vast majority of the labor in this industry is not good. It's not right. We have to continue to make strides toward an immigration program that works.
Great points. Okay, Cyril.
I think you guys nailed it. I mean, water, and water. There on the climate change question, I don't think anybody's switching out their varietals at this point. There's a climatologist who's actually his family's in the industry up in Oregon, a guy named Greg Jones, who published a chart about 10 years ago now, but it had every major wine region in the world and what the major varietals were in each one of that region, and a chart of if it went up 1 degree, what would be planted in those particular areas. And it was pretty fascinating, completely different than it is now. But I don't think we're there yet, and hopefully not for a long time. So
it actually brings up a great point that agriculture has to deal with nature. And so, you know, we're a very adaptive industry, and every year growers have to deal with the cards that are dealt. And so it's interesting with the whole climate change. Obviously, there are some real concerns about some of the impacts that may happen. But at the same time, there are lots of things we can do from a management perspective to help address those. And so whether it's canopy management or water management or drought tolerance and just more tolerant rootstock, there's a lot of different things that we could do. So we've been working collaboratively to try to understand that more, and also to understand how we can reduce our greenhouse gas footprint as an industry.
This is Ann Clark. You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Our program tonight is a holiday toast to the 2015 wine harvest and sustainable practice. It's time now for our last question, and you know who gets to ask that one? Me. That's because I'm chair of the environmental program. About 10 years ago, I was at a conference, I think in Modesto, that was discussing farms and farmlands, not just vineyards. And one of the interesting things about that conference for me was there was only one presentation about technology, only one, 10 years ago. And what I'm hearing from you is a great leap in terms of technology and how you use it and how it's benefited. So I'm going to ask each of you to share with me your perspective of that leap that somehow took place, almost without those of us who are not so connected to you knowing about it happening. So let's start with you and see what you want to say. And advise us, what happened? What happened when we suddenly had
I don't know where the big shift occurred, but boy, I mean, it's across the board. I mean, I was at a trade show today looking at tractors, and, you know, there's something new just all the time. And, you know, we're in the midst of this information age and, you know, apps and phones, and there's there's so many aspects of the industry and so many different types of software. I mean, I could go on and on and on, but in the vineyard, there's got to be a dozen different, you know, very robust programs for managing that. The winery, there's seven or eight of them just for managing your tanks. It's mind-blowing how much technology there is. It's really about deploying it and using it, so.
For me, it's a serious love-hate relationship because a lot of these technologies are making things easier, but the same technologies are taking the human touch out of the vineyards. So technology for us, we embrace it, but we're also very cautious of it. We do not want to take such a leap where all of a sudden we're not handcrafting these wines in the vineyard.
I want to thank Cyril and Jeffrey for their comments on that. That was really interesting. So how are you?
Yeah, I guess I'd say we're kind of similar to Jeffrey in that, you know, in the vineyards, we use soil moisture monitoring and drip irrigation, but it's really about the people, and that's, you know, being organic and biodynamic. It's people who have to be in and around those vineyards every day and monitoring everything. We went 100%, we were 100% renewable energy in 99. So we have a lot of solar panels and things like that. So we have an opportunity to really reduce our impact on the environment or to really increase the quality of our wine. We'll definitely look into whatever technology is available. So it really comes down to the quality and how can we make a better quality wine and reduce our impact.
So Josh, how did you motivate or convince for people that work for you and whom you know, how did you get them started on the technology that's coming down and was going to be useful? How did you get them trained in a way and knowledgeable?
Well, I wasn't around back when we implemented our solar system, but you know we have new technology that is going to be coming soon, and it's going to be interesting to train people. You'll hear about it in the next few months, but we have some really exciting projects that are coming, and they're innovative. But they're not high tech, so again, you know, whatever we can do to reduce our impact and be that model for sustainability is we're open to any technology.
And Kent, how did you see the change happening?
I think to Cyril's point, I think that there can always be a better gadget to harvest the grapes, to bottle the wine, or to store it. But I think information technology is really the key here because with knowledge, you have power. And when you have real-time visibility to what's going on in the vineyards, as you're flying your drones over the vineyards and mapping them, And as you have real-time visibility to what's happening in the tanks, so that you're not having to rely upon sampling every 12 to 24 hours. Through the process, as you're looking at the quality of the wine entering the filler bowl, the quality of the package that you're making all the way through, and even when you're shipping the wine, as you're looking at each of those individual parts, and you've got a system that allows you to see how each of these parts is performing in relationship to the whole, it really gives your people decision-making tools to be able to react much quicker, to be able to ensure that you've got the quality there, that you're not wasting product, you're not wasting materials, and they are empowered and they feel more engaged when they're empowered like that. I think it's information technology is the key.
And Allison, what would you say?
I think they hit on some of the really key points. I think we are in the middle of this tech revolution and that it's only going to continue to help us be more precise and to really take advantage of those things. But at the same time, it's both the combination of high tech and low tech, the people that really at the end of the day have to implement these practices and technologies and make sustainability work.
This is Ann Clark, and you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Our program tonight is a holiday toast to the 2015 wine harvest and sustainable practices. Many thanks to our distinguished panel for their sustainable, innovative, and pioneering work. Jeffrey Landau from the Benzinger family, family winery, to Josh Prigay, is it Josh? Is that right? Oh, good. Fetzer Winery, Kent Mann, the Trencaro family estates, Cecil Penn, the Wine Business Monthly, and our moderator, who's done a wonderful job this evening, Allison Jordan from the California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance. And many thanks to our audience here. Thank you so much for coming and being with us tonight. And it's wonderful to see all of you. We also want to issue our thanks to our audiences on the radio and the internet. You can find our programs on the internet at www.commonwealthclub.org. Click on commonwealthclub.org for multimedia access to programs, current news feeds, streaming audio, radio schedules, 230 radio stations on national radio networks, and audio video tapes, as well as free weekly podcasts and archive programs. Again, I want to remind you to join us on November 18th for Happening, the Story of the Clean Energy Revolution, an award-winning documentary by the Redford Center. A fascinating portrait of how people, their clean energy businesses, and technology, as you are doing, as you have heard from our vendors here tonight, are leading the way to a safe, healthy world environment in the 21st century. This is Ann Clark, Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. Thank you for being with us. This meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating more than 113 years of enlightened discussion, In the Know, is adjourned.